No, hell no. You wouldn't rely on anyone on that team, but that's also why they didn't win.
Yeah, but then again, they could have been better than like the Pistons team that won the championship. They could have been like the better version.
No, they couldn't.
Maybe.
Nah. Because they were relying on old ass Reggie Miller.
Yeah, they did rely on him a lot in
Yeah.
crunch time.
Yeah, man. If you're rel How old is Reggie at that time?
38.
Oh, really?
Probably. That
Born in 65. What year was that? 04?
was
Yeah,
yeah,
he's 39 when he got
no.
that Tayshaun block.
Never liked him either.
I loved Reggie when I was growing up, and then I saw Ray Allen. I was like, ah, screw Reggie Miller.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a
Ray
much
Allen
better
was the more
version.
polished. Ray Allen's just better in every aspect. So I'm choosing Ray Allen 10 times out of 10 out of those two.
Yep.
I'm good on
Plus,
Ray
it
Allen.
also didn't hurt to look at him. It didn't hurt to look at Ray Allen.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my not so much pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
There's nowhere I'd rather be on my birthday than in quarantine doing this podcast with you guys.
Oh, that's sweet. Kinda. I
Absolutely.
think kind of weird, but that's okay.
I'm 1 year older now. I'm an old man now.
Is it official? The grays are coming in?
Oh, they've already been coming in the last 2 years.
Just 2 years?
Mostly on the sides, though.
Wow, you're lucky, man. I've been having grays for like the last 10. Easily.
Do you do anything with them? Use that just for men gel?
No, I just let them grow. Just gotta let it be all natural, man. Come on
Yeah,
now.
I agree. I think you would look good with the gray hairs anyway if it came to that.
Go with my Fu Manchu.
And your disgusting mustache that you've grown
I
out.
shaved it all off, man. It's all gone.
Good choice.
Yeah. Thanks.
Very good
So
choice.
rude. Iso Raj, man, how you feeling?
I wish I had enough hair to so I can say I have some grays, but same old. What day is it today?
It's a Thursday. Send Josh a birthday message.
Yeah, I should have remembered. But the only thing that's really keeping my days kind of in check are how many days till the next Last Dance episode. So like that's my barometer of how the weeks go.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch a couple more of those today.
No.
Don't be that
Really?
guy.
Oh
Don't
yeah.
be that guy.
Gonna treat myself. That's my birthday present to myself.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that.
Yeah, I can't fault you.
All right, so today we're gonna do something a little bit different. We're gonna look at the teams that aren't acknowledged as much in our NBA history. We're looking at teams that didn't quite win the ship. Whether it was because of injuries, because of management, just going up against bad matchups, just guys that never made it. We're looking at 400 players every season, 30 teams. There's got to be a lot of skill in there, and these guys do deserve some just due. So, Raj, why don't you start us off with your major team that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so this team, speaking of the documentary, was the team that Jordan ended up really cementing his legacy as one of the best players, the most clutch player ever. Unfortunately, this team never made it over the hump, and this is the 96 to 98 Utah Jazz. The Jazz were in position to win the championship on two separate occasions, and they really couldn't pull through. And they had to deal with Michael Jordan's flu game in 97. And then in 98, I believe Jordan stripped Malone and setting up the shot where he eventually won the game in six games. And this is one of the better teams in the NBA, but we don't really think of it like that. They have two Hall of Famers, two top 50 players of all time. They're kind of pretty much history, and Jordan really overshadowed them. But this was a team, I believe, that had two 60-win seasons and was a dominant team in the West.
Now, you picking the 96-97 Jazz or the 97-98?
They're both heartbreak, but I'm probably going to choose the 96-97 Jazz just because Michael Jordan hit a game winner in game one of that series and then the flu game. But it's like choosing between two negatives. But I'm going to say the first year the Jazz really had it.
Yeah, it's a really good pick. I mean, going back to something we talked about off the podcast, SB Nation did this 64 team situation where, you know, they put teams against each other that haven't won the championship, and they had different divisions, you know, the flameout division, the overachiever division, etc. And I think it was the 96-97 Jazz team that actually ended up winning the simulation out of all these teams that, you know, we're going to go into a couple of them, obviously, but that Jazz team was, like, obviously one of the stronger ones and, you know, possibly the best one, like you said. The one difference between the 2 years from what I see is, like, their defensive rating went from 9th in the year that you chose to, you know, 97-98, where they were 17th, which is sort of surprising for the Jazz since they were known for their defense and how slow they played, especially. But you look at the rest of the roster, like, there's not much you can look at besides, like, Jeff Hornacek, and you say, well, these role players are pretty good. It's just they had superior coaching to almost every single team in the NBA. Jerry Sloan's system, he could just bring anybody in, and he had like an army-like atmosphere, sort of like what, you know, Greg Popovich did with the Spurs his first few years there. And, you know, if you didn't obey the rules, you're going to get the hell out of there.
You don't think Greg Ostertag was a valuable NBA player? Show some respect, man.
Man, that haircut, though.
Like a real army guy.
Yeah, true.
But Ostertag had some pretty good series against the Bulls, didn't he? Bulls couldn't really stop many guys inside. Not like that.
He had his moments, but mostly he was like a big foul machine. I mean, he put up some double-doubles every once in a while, but they have a lot of token white guys on this team.
Well, this is Utah, after all.
Adam Keefe is like the most token white guy ever to ever step foot on like an NBA floor. He's like the default, you know, token NBA default player in 2K.
Man, that's harsh. This is the year that Stockton has had his buzzer beater three against Houston, right? In 97?
I believe from the top. Let me just check into
that. I'm pretty sure that's the year where I want to say it was game six, where he had it from the very top. And that was probably like his clutchest shot of his career. First time the Jazz have been to the to the finals in franchise history, I think.
You are right. Yeah. May 29th, 1997 is when he hit the shot.
Bang, bang. That was a good team. 9.6 net rating during the season. I mean, they just went against Mike. Like a lot of other teams, man. There's not much to argue against, right?
Yeah, it's just with their supporting cast, so that's the only thing that holds me back from picking them for my pick, but I definitely see the, you know, validity to picking this team since they were very, very close multiple years, obviously. But this year specifically, they were extremely close and they probably should have won. But again, Mike was Mike, so, you know, hard to beat that guy.
But even with your supporting cast at that time, like a lot of teams were very top heavy in the 90s, right? If you look at, let's say the 95 Magic, outside of Shaq and Penny, how deep are you really going? Horace Grant, and then what?
Oh, that team is good.
They're not that deep, though.
I mean, they had Nick Anderson, too, who was like a 20-point-per-game scorer in some years. Penny, obviously. Dennis Scott, who was like 15 points per game.
Yeah, Dennis Scott is the
equivalent. Off the bench, they had some issues.
Dennis Scott isn't much better than any of the Jazz contributors, you know what I mean?
No, but if you're comparing like a fourth guy or a fifth guy in his case versus what the Jazz had, like who's the Jazz's fifth best player? Like Byron Russell's probably what, number four maybe?
Yeah, it'd have to be Byron Russell.
Yeah, that's why I give so much credit to Sloan, just being able to bring this team, especially that bench. And I think what they did was pretty smart and sort of ahead of their time with their bench. They would like really, really slow down the pace to ensure that, you know, they would use up 20 to 24 seconds of the clock, which limits the amount of possessions. So the time that Stockton or Malone is on the bench, you're not losing by that much versus playing at a faster pace where you can give up points and a lot, you know, more of a succession than what they were doing.
I think one thing too, looking at this team, is in their four losses, they only had one loss that was more than 4 points, and two of their losses were by a basket. So like these were close games against a Bulls team that obviously is one of the greatest teams. Not to break the barrier twice in a row, that's why I had to put them at one of the greatest teams to not win the championship.
Yeah.
It's a very good pick.
Fair enough. I'm going to go up next, and I'm going to choose the 2011-2012 OKC Thunder. So during the year, we only had 66 games during the season. They went 47-19, third best record in the league. Obviously, they get to the finals led by Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden off the bench. You're starting with Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka at the time, who was still young. And we've all heard this like 100 times. Three future MVPs on this team all could have stayed together if the OKC ownership was willing to pay a little bit more. And we could have seen like a real dynasty with these three guys together, assuming that, you know, they all develop at the same kind of rate or similar rates, right? They swept Dallas in the first round of the playoffs. They beat the Lakers in five, beat the Spurs in six, and then lost to the Heat in five. I mean, this is an incredible team and could have had so much more if they were actually held together.
Yeah, and if they called that foul on LeBron in game one at the end of the game, things might have changed completely.
You really think so? You think the Heat would have lost in the finals 2 years in a row? No way.
I don't see why not. I mean, OKC had a ton of talent. The other thing with that that finals team was they played Kendrick Perkins way too much.
Awful.
Which is something that held them back, obviously. Playing, you know, Miami's playing Chris Bosh at center, and you have Kendrick Perkins trying to get out and guard him on the perimeter. It just made no sense. They should have been playing either Serge at center or even Nick Collison, if you want to say big. But they kept Kendrick out there for 20 to 27 minutes a game in a lot of these games, and you're just wondering, like, what the hell is Scott Brooks thinking?
Yeah, I think a lot of people wonder what is Scott Brooks thinking a lot of times. Cue every other Oklahoma City Thunder team or, you know, the current Washington Wizards.
Yeah. Also, correction, it was game two that they didn't call that foul, so they would have went up 2-0 going back to Miami. Whether it's three games in a row, because they hadn't changed the finals format at that point. Yeah. But it would have been a lot more difficult for Miami to overcome that hurdle, especially after losing to Dallas the previous year, being down 2-0 in the finals again.
Yeah, I don't know. I still don't think that Miami would have lost 2 years in a row, but I don't know. The what if of this Oklahoma City Thunder team is so large. It's probably like one of the biggest what ifs in the league, right? In league history.
Yeah, I think that's like the main point here is like not the fact that they didn't win it this year. Like they were going against the Miami team that was looking for revenge after getting embarrassed by Dallas the year before. But like this team on paper, just seeing how those three players have developed over the course of their career, like they could have easily been the next dynasty. Like they could have had a three-peat after this year. And obviously ownership had a huge part to play, but on paper, this team was stacked. Like on NBA 2K, I guess 2012, like that was the team to pick.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside with this team for me, I was going to say, like, they're starting like a lot of Derek Fisher in the playoffs and a lot of Tabo Cephalosha, too, who didn't really do a lot. So my hatred towards Derek Fisher sort of sways me away from this team.
Yeah, but they got Nazi Muhammad on this team, man. I should bring you back in.
And I actually enjoyed Daquan Cook, too. Like, he was one of my favorite shitty role players, you know?
Daquan Cook was nice.
He had a nice-looking shot.
Yeah. He was a good... Oh, Royal Ivy was on this team, too?
Cole Aldridge?
nah, hard pass. This is a good team. It's definitely one of the biggest what-ifs. And, you know, if OKC were willing to pay Serge and Harden during the summer, you would have seen that lineup going forward instead of Jeremy Lamb.
Yeah, and Kevin Martin.
Yeah. I mean, I think they ended up getting Steven Adams out of that trade as well as a future draft pick, which is one of the few silver linings out of that trade. But, I mean, three MVPs. There's not much to say about it. What could have been? Kevin Durant was, like, going into his prime. At that point, he was only, like, what, 23? 24 at most? Same with Westbrook?
Yeah.
Man.
And even though they were young, I still think they probably could have won that year if they had better coaching.
Yeah, well, that's always a major issue, though.
I just don't understand how Kendrick Perkins just consistently played throughout that series after, you know, game two especially. It just made no sense to me.
He was getting paid the big bucks, man.
Like, all you had to do is look at the, like, not only what you see with your eyes, but just the data itself to see how much better you are with somebody who's mobile on Chris Bosh.
But that was one of the first times that you started seeing, like, quote-unquote small ball being put out there, right?
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, the another team we're going to talk about soon, the, you know, 2005 onward Phoenix Suns with D'Antoni, they introduced that, obviously, I mean, in a big way where they can play it consistently. But I think more teams, even like Miami, if you look at them, they switched over their play style to have Chris Bosh and then Battier in the lineup as well at the four. So it's a game of matchups, and OKC just decided never to adjust.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, though. I think Miami was one of the first to bring their big out as a primary perimeter presence with Bosh shooting threes at that point, or at least very deep twos. Because, like, Dallas year before had Tyson Chandler. You're looking at Boston and LA the years prior. You had Bynum and Perkins, again, holding down the paint. Before that, the Miami team was like that. You're right, the Suns were the only team that went quote-unquote small, but even then, Amari couldn't really spread the floor like Chris Bosh could.
Oh, I don't know about that. Amari had a nice 18-footer. He was very consistent.
The same as Bosh, though? I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, from mid-range, yes. From, you know, 20 feet out and further up, you know, beyond the three-point line,
yeah,
probably not.
Definitely not behind the line.
Amari was also more of a threat from that point, too, right? He could just catch and go, and you're just not going to stop him. He was more powerful than Bosh was.
Yeah, that's true. But that would mean that's why Kendrick Perkins was more valuable in that kind of situation, right? You just plant a guy inside against Amari and hope that he just runs into him.
But just the fact they had like a perfect matchup for Bosh and Serge Ibaka, or like a theoretical matchup anyway,
yeah.
In terms of a guy that is bigger than Bosh, but in terms of speed, he's not as quick as Bosh, but he can stay with him at least, and he can guard LeBron on switches and such and not get completely torched like, you know, Kendrick Perkins. But yeah, it's so frustrating watching that series. Even like in the moment, I was like, what is happening here? What are they doing?
Really? I don't remember thinking
that.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, we all play basketball, right? And you see like a big, loafy, big guy who can't move his feet on a quicker player who has a ball. You're just like, why is this a matchup? Just switched somebody smaller onto him, even like put Kevin Durant on him.
Yeah. Kevin Durant, 7 foot two guard, though, doesn't want to play like that.
One of the best ever played.
That's true. Josh, who do you have as your number one pick?
My number one pick is a bit unconventional, but I just love this roster overall, and I think that they could survive in any type of play style and any type of era. So I picked the 1999-2000 Portland Trail Blazers, the team that lost to the LA Lakers in the Western Conference Finals when they were up 13 points in the third quarter, going into the fourth, and then they completely choked. but in terms of their roster, like they were 10 or 11 players deep. I mean, young Jermaine O'Neal was on this team, and he played in about 70 games, and he was playing like 10 minutes a game, I believe. But that just shows how deep this roster was, that he couldn't even get on the court. And then a couple of years later, he turned into an all-star player with a different team, obviously, with Indiana. Their consistency throughout the lineup, with having Damon Stoudemire, Steve Smith, Scottie Pippen, Sheed, and Sabonis. They play at such a slow pace, but at the same time, you have so many different options. And it's basically a perfectly constructed playoff roster, because you can just pick out whichever is the weakest matchup, you can just post that guy up and just feed off them, which is what they did, and it was smart. And, you know, I mean, in today's day and age, maybe you don't have Sabonis starting, you have Detlef Schrempf starting at the four, and Sheed at the five, and then you still have, you know, a guy like Brian Grant off the bench, Greg Anthony, Bonzi Wells was just starting to come up at that point, and he was like a beast in the post. He would just overwhelm smaller guards. So I just like the overall roster composition, and, you know, they were one win away from probably, you know, winning the championship going as, I think it was Indiana that year. So I really like this team.
That was a major choke job on their part.
Oh, for sure.
Just pulling up the stats from the box score, and like, I forgot that they had a lead that big, but they got outscored 31-13 in the fourth quarter, and they only lost the game by five. So that was like in a game seven, that's probably one of the biggest choke jobs in game seven history.
Yeah, I mean, in that game, they had one of the most infamous moments in NBA history when Kobe, you know, crossed over Scottie Pippen, got to the basket, threw up that alley-oop for Shaq, and then
Bryant to Shaq!
Shaq ran back pointing to Kobe in the crowd, and LA, the arena was just going crazy.
Yeah, that was a good, who coached that team?
Mike Dunleavy, senior.
Oh, haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of the rare teams that was top five in both offense and defense, which leads you to, you know, most of the time it leads you to think that it's going to be one of the best teams in the league at that point, which it was. And when you have stats like that, you know, most teams of that ilk eventually do win a championship when you're top five in both. I mean, the Raptors showed that last year. But, you know, they just couldn't get over that fourth quarter hump.
Which is often the issue with teams that never make it, right? Like, we're looking at these teams for a reason. A lot of it is because of injury, and then a lot of the situations are like this, where they just don't hold it together going down the stretch. I mean, if you really look at this lineup that they have, you're looking at Pippen, who obviously did his thing with the Bulls. But otherwise, there's no one who had actually won championships before, right? Or even gone deep into the playoffs. Sheed?
Well, Detlef Schrempf.
Schrempf.
He made the finals a couple times.
He made it once, didn't he? With the Supersonics? I think that was it.
Yes, sorry. One time.
Yeah, he made it in 96 with the Sonics, and that was it. And at that point, he was 37. Like, Shrimp is old. And they're playing against a young Lakers team with Kobe and Shaq. Kobe, young Kobe, and Shaq in his prime. There's no way Shrimp would have, you know, touched the floor and been that competitive against this team.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, like, even if he's not playing well, he's still got, like, Stacey Ogman off the bench as well. You know, Plastic Man, who was a really good defensive player back in his day.
Plastic.
What a great name, too, eh?
That's good.
One of the better nicknames of all time.
Yeah, that's good. This team is, it's kind of deep, but there's not too much experience from what I'm seeing. Greg Anthony from the Knicks teams, but even then, he wasn't a major contributor either.
Yeah, just too bad we couldn't see Arvydas Sabonis in his prime, because these are like his later years, obviously, and he was so much fun to watch back then. He was like basically Jokic before Jokic.
Yeah.
But even bigger than Jokic. Like, he was a big boy. He wasn't as fat as Jokic. He's just wide.
He's a big dude.
Big dude.
He came into the league at like 28 or 29, right? Like, really late. Maybe even late.
Yeah, I think it might have been 30. Yeah.
That's a shame, man.
Political situation over there, and, you know, he couldn't get over to the States at that time, but in the Olympics, he was just dominating.
Pop quiz, what team was Rasheed Wallace drafted to?
I should know this, but I don't.
Eastern Conference team.
Western Conference?
Eastern Conference team.
Indiana?
I'll go with Philadelphia.
The Washington Bullets.
Yes.
Traded for Rod Strickland. That's how he made his way over to Portland. Averaged 16.4 points this year. Turned out to be one of the better power forwards of his generation. Just didn't live up to the hype because he didn't want to, but man, Sheed was a problem in those days.
Yeah, the Bullets made some interesting trades back then. They also traded Chris Webber as well to the Kings. It turned out to be a little bit of a mistake.
Great idea.
Also foreshadowing another one of my teams.
Yeah, I figured as much. All right, Raj, who's your next team?
Well, I'm not going to steal Josh's thunder, so I'm going to say my third team just because I'll let Josh get into it. My third team, third best team to never win a championship is those Nash Phoenix Suns, particularly the 2006-2007 team. I think we all remember the infamous suspension that the league handed out after Game 4 to Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire, and how it kind of changed the course of that series. Obviously, it was Robert Horry that landed probably one of the biggest shots he's ever taken at Steve Nash in Game 4. And that team on paper, just looking at the roster, it was absolutely incredible with Amari, Nash. You had Barbosa, Marion, Rajah Bell, James Jones. And then you had a few other veterans like Jalen Rose. But again, on paper, that team played an attractive style of basketball. Honestly, I'm surprised they never made a finals, let alone won a championship. And had they been able to beat that San Antonio Spurs team, they would have absolutely crushed the Cavaliers in probably four games. So Nash had two MVPs, but the Suns got no trophies. So that has to be one of the top three teams to never win it.
Yeah, they were my number two as well, actually. I mean, I fell in love with those Suns teams just as I was like really getting into basketball. And when Ori hip-checked Steve Nash in Game 4 of that series, when Phoenix was able to tie it 2-2, especially after, like, I think it was about a year or two before that, where, you know, the Phoenix Suns just couldn't win in San Antonio. Like, they had the hardest time even keeping it close when they went to play the Spurs in San Antonio. They win a couple games, obviously, in Phoenix, but Tim Duncan would just dominate them at home, especially, and Steve Nash wouldn't be able to keep up with Tony Parker. And that was, you know, a big hump they were able to get over in Game 4. And it felt like the series was turning at that point with the Suns going back to, you know, playing Phoenix in Game 5, having all the momentum. And then at the end of the game, you know, Robert Horry pushes Steve Nash into the scorer's table. And, you know, Boris Diaw and Amari get off the bench and they take 1 foot on the floor each and they both get suspended, which is like the biggest, still the biggest bullshit suspension in the history of basketball. I'm still angry that team didn't win a championship that year. And that was the 1 year, too, where they had all their guys, you know? Like, they traded, I think, Joe Johnson the year before that, or they let him go to Atlanta because he wanted too much money.
Yep.
Which the Suns probably should have still matched, but they didn't. But they had, you know, Boris Diaw and Amare both in the lineup, which is something they hadn't had even a couple years after that, because one of them would always get injured, especially Amare. So yeah, this is a time where, you know, Boris Diaw is coming off the bench but still playing big minutes, and yeah, I mean, it's so disappointing to watch that series.
Raj, do you think the league was wrong in suspending Amari and Boris Diaw?
I call absolute bullshit, and I don't know if it's the biggest controversy in the last at least 20 years in terms of like decisions that the league office made, but it's definitely up there. And again, the precedent is it was very minimal. Like, it's not like Amari and Boris were running onto the court and like throwing fists. They literally barely a foot over the line, and they got suspended in a key game in game five, and the Spurs were able to grind it out. They won by only 3 points in game five in Phoenix without Amari and Boris Diaw. Like, you're telling me that Suns team wouldn't have won that game? It could have been a completely different series.
Well, in their defense, they didn't win game six either, though. I mean, in the Spurs' defense. Like, you can say that they should have won and all this and that, but they had their opportunity in game six, too.
But again, they were on the road. Like, it's different playing on the road. And of course, you have to win multiple games. And Phoenix did earn the right to be the home team. And at four games, they were tied 2-2. They go back to Phoenix without two of their top six players, especially Amari. And they lose 88-85. And then they go in game six and they play the Spurs hard. The Spurs were able to, they were up by double digits in the fourth, but they made it close, an 8-point game. And at that point, you probably would have went to game seven. And then game seven at home, Phoenix with all their players, I think Phoenix had a very good shot of winning that game. And especially because the Suns didn't do really anything except those two players step over the line that really made the Spurs earn that. Like, the Spurs really got a free pass on game five.
I don't think so. I think if two of your main guys are coming or are suspended for something that small, that team is heated going into game five. Right, like they're in that mindset where they're literally putting everything on the floor. There's nothing left.
Yeah, but you're not factoring in that they had seven, maybe eight players that D'Antoni trusted, and then you're losing two of those players, which means you're playing a top six.
But that's up to the team, though, man. That's not anyone else's fault, but D'Antoni's fault.
No, that isn't. We know in the NBA that most teams in the playoffs go maximum eight deep in the playoffs. Like, you really look for a contribution from seven, maybe eight. That's it. You don't go 9, 10, 11. So if you take out those two players that are part of your top six, definitely, maybe seven, then you're five. And then you're getting no other contribution from your bench. So, like, I think that's complete bullshit. Like, they shouldn't have been suspended. And if you take out two players from any of these teams that have won in six or seven games, that could change the whole course of the series. Like, if you take out Pippen and Rodman out of Jordan's for one of the games, the Jazz probably win a series.
Yeah, and I think the purpose of the rule was to really stop a situation like New York and Miami had back in 2000, I think it was, or 1999. You know, the situation where Van Gundy was like hugging Alonzo Mourning's leg, and a bunch of the New York players came off the bench during that big fight. That's what they're trying to stop. But a player just putting one foot on the court, I mean, the NBA could have just let that slide and give them fines, but they chose to really implement the rule, even though that's not really what the rule was intended to be.
You also have to remember that this is just like a couple of years coming off of the Malice at the Palace too, right? Where obviously you remember Ron Artest and Steven Jackson going into the crowd. So it's because of instances like that and like the Knicks one that you were talking about that the league had to be strict with this kind of stuff. Especially David Stern was always a stickler for this kind of stuff too. Right? Like, that dude was putting down like a hard clamp on the league.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I see why they did it, but at the same time, it's round two of the playoffs when you have two rival teams going against each other and everyone wants to see both teams at full strength going back to Phoenix to see if Phoenix can finally get over the hump, and them putting a foot on the floor shouldn't have affected that.
I think, and for me, the biggest point is the fact that Robert Horry only got two games of suspension compared to Stoudemire and Diaw, one game each. That just shows like the suspensions didn't have equal weight for the actions that were taken. Like, Robert Horry literally hip-checked Steve Nash, could have caused him to be injured. Imagine he was out for the rest of the season. Like, the weight of suspension was an absolute joke. Again, find the team, find the players. Don't suspend them for a game in the playoffs. And
no. But you can't just make up arbitrary sentences, though.
No, but
that's what I'm saying. No, because the rule book said that if any player,
the rules were bad,
that's a game.
The rules were bad, and the league has to acknowledge the fact that the rules are bad. And if someone, let's say, goes out and punches a player in the face and they get 2 games suspended, but if you step on the line, you get one, like, where's the equality in the rules? Like, it's like giving someone $1,000 fine for going 1 kilometer over the speed limit, but then if someone crashes into another car, giving them like a $1,500 fine. That's literally equivalent. Like, there's no balance in the rules, and the league makes the rules. So the league's really, really fucked over the Phoenix Suns, if you ask me.
They still had their chance. I have them in my team.
You can't take away one of the best players in the playoffs that year and be like, they still had a chance. That doesn't make any sense.
They still had a chance. They had game 6.
Yeah, but you, like, watching that series, you could feel after game 5, like, all the air which is taken out of that team.
And this goes back to my previous point that some teams just can't get over that mental hump, man. Like, I'm not saying this is a small hump. This is obviously huge, and it was on my list, too. The 7 Suns should probably have made the finals and beaten the Cavs, but this is the hand that you're being dealt, right? In a way that, like, you still have to deal with whatever is coming at you. I'm not going to pity for you because you stepped on the court.
Well, you should, because that rule is nonsense, and it still is.
I want to talk to non-Canadians about this, because I think you guys are too hooked on to Nash as well.
It's not even Nash, it's just how fun that team was, and they were before their time, and now every team sort of plays that way.
Yeah, that's true. They were one of the first teams to spread the floor like that, to have constant ball movement like that. They were a hella fun team to watch, that's for sure.
And Amari was underrated back then, too. A lot of people just saw him as a dunker and a guy that Steve Nash fueled, but he had a post game, too. And he was scoring, I think the year before that, he was scoring like 38 points per game against the Spurs, even though they lost in 5 games. So Amari had really improved by that point. I mean, his first year, he's obviously just a dunker, but beyond that point, like, he was extremely skilled.
Would you rather have prime Amari or prime Sean Kemp?
Amari.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think I would do the same, but I also watch Amari much more than Sean Kemp, so a little bit of recency bias on that part. Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. All right, speaking of non-exciting teams, because this is going to be the exact opposite of the 07 Suns, I'm going way out there with the 04-05 Indiana Pacers. How about that?
Ugh. Oh, God.
So the Pacers in 04, in the 03-04 season were first in the league. And then, you know, obviously they lose to the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals. You have Tayshaun Prince with that incredible chase down block against Reggie Miller, and which sort of swung the whole series that year. And then you go into 04-05. You know, the Pacers are feeling good about themselves. They have Rick Carlisle leading the They have Rick Carlisle as their head coach. J.O. was an MVP candidate the year before. Ron Artest was the defensive player of the year before. Everything was pointing upwards, right? Reggie Miller's last year. You have Steven Jackson being brought in to be a major offensive contributor. And then bang, Malice at the Palace happens in November. And this team just goes all the way down. We're looking at a full year suspension for Ron Artest. Steven Jackson gets 30 games. Jermaine O'Neal gets 15. And without your primary perimeter defender, at this time when the perimeter players you were going against, like Vince and T-Mac kind of guys, man, you're done. This team was cooked right after that. And it was always one of those, like, huh, this team is really good situations for me. Like, they played very similarly to the 04 Pistons, but I would say they probably had a better offense. But, I mean, if it wasn't for those suspensions, I would have been very interested to see how this team would have ended up.
I mean, me too, but I don't know. I mean, if you can't even make it through a season and you're saying that this is one of the best teams that didn't win it, I just can't see that.
No. I'm not saying they're one of the best teams to never win it. I just wanted to bring them up.
Oh, so they're not on the list then. They're not even there.
Oh, I brought them on the list just so I could talk about them. But they, like, okay. you know what how it is, man. It's more of an honorable mention than they're actually there. But I had the 07 Suns as well, so I didn't want to repeat with that.
Man, Ron Artest was playing 42 minutes before the suspension.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
That's talk insane. About load management.
That was a nasty team, man.
See, the thing with me with this team, though, is like they have a really nasty team, and they're great on defense and everything, but they're also playing in a time where teams were not that great, and they were scoring like 80 points per game in a lot of these games, so I don't know. Just talent-wise, I don't know if I see it.
Hey, man, you're only playing against whoever's around you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, if you like move them from that year to now or even like before then, the 90s, I don't know how well they do.
No. I'm not saying that you compare them to... I don't like comparing different eras. That's why I always use net rating as like one of my primary stats to look at how strong teams are. You know what I mean? Because you can't compare most teams from the early 2000s to now or to the 90s. Because the early 2000s was that weird era in the NBA where, like, most of the teams were weak. In all honesty.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. It's based on talent, right? So with this team, I just don't know if they have enough talent to compete. I know you don't want to compare eras or anything, but even in that era, like, if you had a couple better teams in there, I just don't think that they would really stack up. The league was in a weird situation at that time.
Yeah, I totally agree. But they had your boy Scott Pollard.
My guy Jeff Foster.
Too. And Austin Crozier. My God, look at those three white guys up front.
It worked for them. Jeff Foster was nice back then.
I mean, if you say so.
He was like the less talented Brad Miller.
Way less talented. Don't even come close to comparing them. Jesus Christ, man.
Jeff Foster was a very good defensive player, though. I always liked his game.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. But we can move on.
So who do you actually have on your list?
My next actual team?
Yes, that is actually talented.
It would have been the 0-1 Bucks.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, the 0-1 Bucks. They were one of those conspiracy theory teams, similar to like the 0-2 Kings, right? Where the whole idea behind them is that they lost to the 76ers because the league wanted Allen Iverson to make the finals. That he would have brought better viewership numbers than the Bucks would have. Which probably is true. But then at the same time, their styles of play were very different. Right? Like, one of the common stats that you hear about from that series between the 76ers and the Bucks is the 76ers finished with a 186-120 free throw advantage. But you rarely hear about the Sixers being like the fourth best team in the league to get to the line, or the Bucks being the 25th team in the league to get to the line. Bucks were also awful on D. They had the 6th most fouls in the league that year. Kind of contributes to why there's a free throw discrepancy, right? So there's a lot of little stuff like that, but at the same time, the Bucks had Ray Allen, Sam Cassell, and Big Dog Glenn Robinson leading that team. I would have loved to see that team going against the Kobe and Shaq Lakers instead of Allen Iverson single-handedly going in there.
So you would have loved to see them get swept.
You know what? Maybe. But Allen Iverson doing his one thing in game one isn't much better.
Oh, it's 10 times better. That Milwaukee team would have been swept easily. I don't think so. At least Allen Iverson gave us a moment.
I can do without the moment, man.
Also, is this your second team?
No. I'm throwing lots of wrenches at you, man.
This guy's got...
Okay, so who's your actual second team? Because you're picking an Eastern Conference team that was, let's see here, 20th in defense.
Yeah.
In a really weak Eastern Conference that lost to a one-man show who would have been swept in the finals even if they beat them.
I don't think they would have gotten swept. Let's be real.
Oh, they definitely would have gotten swept. The Lakers swept through the Western Conference, and it took like an Allen Iverson godly performance and also a lot of luck in that game for them not to sweep through the entire playoffs. And you think this Milwaukee Bucks team with Glenn Robinson, Lindsey Hunter is your fifth best player, is going to beat the Lakers?
Big dog. All right.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, so my actual order.
Darvin Ham.
Yo, Darvin Ham is nice, man. World champion Darvin Ham. Don't disrespect.
I mean, Amari Stoudemire, I mean, he would have been Darvin Ham if he decided just not to improve himself in any area of the game.
Oh, man.
I can't believe you brought this team up. That's just an insult to all the teams that didn't win a championship.
I'm going real hipster on you. My actual order was going to be 97 Jazz, 07 Suns, and then 12 Thunder. So that was, you know, that's why I'm going.
Okay, out. That's respectable.
That's why I'm going out of the box here, man.
That's more respectable.
Yeah, my team's already named off. I'm just keeping it light for you.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Move on, Josh. What do you got?
From the teams that we haven't talked about yet, I think we also have to bring up the 2012-2013 San Antonio Spurs, the team that lost to Miami after that Ray Allen game-tying shot in Game 6. I mean, they were basically one free throw away from icing that game, or another, you know, situation where the coach completely fucked up, going back to, you know, the Kendrick Perkins thing. In this situation, it was only just a one possession fuck up where Greg Popovich decided not to play Tim Duncan for who knows what reason. And then Miami got that rebound off of LeBron miss, and the rest was history. So that team was really strong. And I think they're probably a candidate to be number one, honestly, with how deep they were. He still had the big three with Ginobili, Parker, and Tim Duncan. He had Kawhi coming up. Kawhi only averaged about 12 points that season. But in the finals, he was a monster. And they actually let him go a little bit and actually, you know, let his game expand at that point. And posting him up, giving him looks off the pick and roll. So they basically had a four-headed monster right there. And then their bench was still solid back then as well.
See, that's the difference. I was trying to avoid, like, teams that had won during that era. You know what I mean? So, because they won the next year, I purposely avoided them. I avoided doing the 16 Warriors because, like, you know, they won the year before and 2 years after that. But that being
said, yeah, they're the obvious choice out of all these teams if you're not going to include that caveat. So,
yeah, I went really out of the box, clearly. But this, the 13 Spurs were really good. That was the year that Danny Green almost became Finals MVP. Was it Game 6 that Kawhi missed that free throw down the stretch as well?
Yeah, I think Ginobili missed one too. But the Kawhi one was the one right before that possession. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had their chances. And then Game 7, Duncan infamously misses that bunny at the net over Shane Battier. You know, they had their chances. They just done messed up.
They had so many rotation players on this team, though. Like, Thiago Splitter was a good player back then. Gary Neal was killing it off the bench with his three-point shooting. Boris Diaw. Matt Bonner could fill in some minutes. Corey Joseph played a lot at times. DeJuan Blair was good at points.
Oh, DeJuan Blair, no knees.
Yeah. Aaron Baines didn't even play. And he's obviously a really good player now, but just goes to show you how deep that roster was.
Yeah, they were definitely one of the funner teams to watch at that time. At any time, to be honest.
Yeah, and then next year they just took it to the whole another level, and you know they became like the beautiful game, and their passing, especially in like the Western Conference Finals leading up to the finals, is just probably the best we've ever seen.
Better than the 15 Warriors?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Their passing was better. All right, Raj, who's your next team?
I'm honestly surprised this hasn't been mentioned in full, but I has to be the 0-2 Kings.
That was my next team.
just because if you look at this team, like in terms of just their roster, this was a team that was built. They had a lot of versatility. They obviously ran into a very strong Lakers team, but I think everyone's at some point heard or seen that Game 6, where the referees really, to put it lightly, questionable calls. It honestly probably changed the course of the series. And this was a 7-game series where Game 7 went into overtime and the Lakers were able to squeeze through and win the championship. But this team is a team with Chris Webber, Mike Bibby, Divac, young Hedo Turkoglu. They had Peja coming off the bench, and they really had everything to win it except a bit of luck going their way and maybe the refs that were really trying to help the Lakers get their eventual three-peat.
You know, looking back at it, though, like that was probably the best series I've ever seen, honestly, just in terms of the rivalry and how tight these teams would play each other. and they're completely contrasting styles of play, which is super fun to watch. And the lead up to those games was incredible too. Like, the anticipation leading up to those games is unbelievable. And the Kings' only holes, I would say, first of all, just their big man situation coming off the bench, which they later improved on years later, getting Brad Miller. But at that time, you know, Chris Webber's knees were done. But just having Scott Pollard as your backup five, and, you know, he could be a body, I guess, against Shaq, but not much of one because Shaq just ate him.
Scott Pollard was six fouls just waiting for Shaq.
Pretty much. Same with Lawrence Funderburk as well.
The
bigger hole for them was Peja. Because Peja just would never show up in the big games. I mean, I remember, I think it was in game 7, actually. I think it was tied. And the Kings, I think, had the last possession. And they went to Peja for basically a wide open three-pointer in the corner, and he airballed it. And he came off the bench because I think he had a slight injury, but he was also just not playing well. So Hito Turkoglu was actually playing really well in that series, and he started over Peja. Even in Game 7, Peja only played 25 minutes, and it was an overtime game. And Hito played more than him. So, you know, just playoff after playoff, Peja just couldn't show up in the big games.
Yeah, Peja went 0 for 6 from 3 in that Game 7, and 3 from 12 from the field. In 25 minutes of action.
Yeah, if you actually looked at it, Peja and Doug Christie together were, 5 of 23 from the field. Ooh, that is
don't
nasty.
Lump in Doug Christie with that, okay? Don't lump in Doug Christie with Peja's terrible play. At least Doug Christie was doing a half-decent job against Kobe. He was doing his job. Peja was not doing his job.
Yeah, his job doesn't include shooting 18% from the field, though.
Yeah, well, most games, Doug Christie's not going to shoot over 6 or 7 times from the field, so you can't blame him. You can't lump him into that.
No, I'm not saying... No, yeah, you can. You can always blame someone for shooting a poor percentage.
So blame Peja.
Yeah, I blame Peja more, obviously. But yeah, this team was not great outside of their starting five, and at least in this game. It was more just, they never showed up. Never, ever showed up. Even having a guy like Webber being your primary focal point down the stretch is a little shaky. Because he's never going to beat
someone. Bibby was that guy. Bibby turned into that guy throughout the playoffs.
He had to. He wasn't that during the season.
That game 5, he hit that game-winning shot off the pick and roll. Off the handoff, actually, sorry. And Chris Webber just wasn't one to be the guy in crunch time, nor did he really want to be.
Shout out to Bobby Jackson, though. I used to love Bobby Jackson when I was younger.
Yeah, surprisingly, he didn't play that much in this series. I mean, the last couple of games, he played less than 25 minutes.
Too small, right?
I guess. I mean, going against the Lakers guards off the bench, you had Brian Shaw and Tyronn Lue.
Lindsey Hunter.
I mean, it's hard to play him and Bibby together, I guess, if you have Kobe on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. Who's going to guard Kobe out of those two?
You can always keep Christie at the 3, I guess. But I guess back then, they weren't thinking the same way as we are now, so no. It's a little bit different.
Because, yeah, back then it was all size. You remember the way this Lakers team played. It was all inside out, right?
Yeah. I mean, now you could just put Bobby Jackson on Rick Fox and be like, all right, try to post him up. Go ahead. That keeps the ball out of Kobe and Shaq's hands.
Rick Fox.
But they had a nice top 7, though. I mean, Webber, Bibby, Christie, Turkoglu, Divac, Stojakovic, and Jackson. It's just they were missing one player and then obviously missing Stojakovic in big games. So technically 2 players.
Ouch. Would we say that they were one of the first teams to essentially show the game as we see it now? Constant ball movement. No one on this team had more than 5 assists on the year. Averaged more than 5 assists on the year. But as a team, they averaged 24 assists. That's incredible.
I think today it's more so guard-oriented, right? Where the point guard or the shooting guard, whoever your star player is, has the ball in his hands a lot, runs a lot of pick and rolls. I think the 2001-2002 Kings are more so compared to the Warriors before Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Where you'd run a whole lot of high post splits, and you'd have the big man be the guy who sort of runs the offense and, you know, gives the ball up to the guards once they're able to find some space and get open. And that was, you know, especially with Bibby. Bibby was great off the ball. And same sort of sets as the Warriors ran in 2015 onward, up until they got Durant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'd say it's more similar to the Warriors. But nonetheless, they were one of the teams that brought in similar eras to modern ball.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, even in that series, I mean, Robert Horry hit that crazy shot in game four to tie it up 2-2. And after the game, you know, Vlade Divac is calling it a lucky shot. And then Robert Horry was asked about that. And he said, you know, Vlade Divac needs to pick up a newspaper. I've been doing this for a long time.
The disrespect, man.
But yeah, like, can you think of a series? Do you actually watch that series back then?
I was in and out of it. That was when I was first starting to watch basketball. So it was.
Okay. I was going to say, like, can you think of a series that was better than that one? That series basically had everything. Teams hated each other. A lot of close games. Differing play styles. Kobe and Shaq, obviously, in their primes.
Shit talking.
Yeah.
That was the Sacramento Queens series, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah. All right, you got one more, or are you good?
I believe those are my four. So I had the 2012-13 Spurs, 99-2000 Blazers, 01-02 Kings, and then the Phoenix Suns from 2006-2007.
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much had the same teams between, 97 Jazz, 07 Suns, 12 Thunder, 02 Kings. Those are the major ones, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, special
show. In terms of the team I miss the most, it has to be the 2006-2007 Suns. Even like the year before when they had Joe Johnson.
That was a fun team.
I love that team too.
That was a very fun team. And then
Joe Johnson broke his face in round two. That was brutal.
Special shoutouts, 95 Magic. Obviously, remember the Nick Anderson missed free throws. The 11 Bulls could have been interesting if Derrick Rose didn't get injured. Thanks, Tom Thibodeau, for that one. 08 Rockets, I had, just because I think they were relatively fun when T-Mac and Yao were on together. And that team had that 22-game winning streak when it was like Aaron Brooks and Luis Scola out there for most of the time. I love that team.
Yeah, but I think that year T-Mac got injured in the playoffs, right? And he couldn't play in the first round?
Yeah, that's right. That's when Yao came back for the first round and T-Mac got hurt. Those two just never meshed, literally, because they couldn't get on the floor at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, shame. Anyways, I think that's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor, Google Podcasts, all the major podcast platforms. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.